This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. The 2010 midterm elections are approaching, the first Tuesday in November. Many eyes across the country are watching to see what this means for the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, the Tea Party, President Obama's administration, and our history doctor, Bill Smith, is here to give us a dose of some reality about midterm elections. Welcome back, Bill.
Glad to be back.
Okay, midterm elections. Big deal?
They are a very big deal, and especially to the political party of the sitting president. In the 20th century, every president has had a loss for his party in the midterms. Now, four of them have served long enough to have a second midterm in which they were able to turn that around, but the consensus is the president's party is going to lose. The only question is, how much?
In my lifetime, it's happened quite a bit. Reagan in his first midterm, Clinton in his. Is this something that has happened, something new in the 20th century, or does this date back to, you know, our first presidents?
Well, we've seen a lot of the coverage in the media talking about 1994 and Bill Clinton facing the Republicans' contract with America. And here we go again with our very presentist view. No, as a matter of fact, the idea of banding together what is essentially local politics, the House of Representative races, in the midterm elections into national campaigns, either on the behalf of the sitting president or some party out of power or some issue, is not recent at all. Certainly the Tea Party is getting a lot of media attention, both pro and con, and the echo event in 94, but you can go back to some American midterms and find these issues and events all the way through our history. Sure, contract with America is getting the examination from the media, but what about the swing around the circle?
Okay. I'll admit, I don't know what swing around the circle is.
Well, Kyle, set the Wayback Machine for 1866 and President Andrew Johnson, who had come into office after Abraham Lincoln's assassination. He became the first president to have his veto overridden by Congress as Johnson, the fusion Democrat from the Civil War period, is running up against a very Republican Congress. Johnson is not pleased with this, and he will go out and campaign to try to cut down the Republican majorities and associate himself with Democrats, some of them who had questionable racial elements to their campaigns and the country side that they were coming from. He saw, though, that he was in a bad situation with the GOP, and he had to do something about it. So the president set off on a tour of the country. This was unprecedented. It was called the Swing Around the Circle, trying to support Democratic candidates. It horribly backfired on Johnson and set the stage for a showdown with the radical Republicans in Congress that eventually will lead to Johnson getting another first, the first president to be impeached by Congress. He allowed the GOP to go from a solid majority to a veto-proof majority, losing 37 seats with his tour of speeches, many of which ended with violence, the president being booed off the stage, or in one town, the president not able to give the speech at all because of the protests against his appearance.
That's a PR nightmare.
Yes, indeed it was.
So then this gain by the party that's not in the White House in the middle, is this just kind of the ebb and flow, what we should expect?
For the most part, yes. From the founding fathers to Barack Obama, midterms have served as sort of regularly scheduled parliamentary referendums on how the sitting president and his party are seen by the people in doing their jobs.
So is there a connection then between, can you go back and see presidents that were more popular at the midterm do a better job of hanging on to seats in both chambers?
Well, I do think you can see a pretty direct correlation between the president's popularity and the amount of midterm success the opposition can have. When Bill Clinton took a 54-seat hit in his first term, it was based on a lot of negativity in the country toward his program. Now, he turned that around and scored one of the rare midterm gains in 1998. So within one presidency, you see the two halves of that equation. The same can be said for George Bush. In 2002, seen as an effective leader coming out of 9/11, he gets a mild 8-seat increase in the House. But by the time circumstances around the world turned against Bush and perception of his ability to lead and his party waned, This fueled a 31-seat loss at his other midterm election in 2006, and not only a 31-seat loss, it put the Democrats back in control of the House for the first time since Gingrich's achievement against Clinton in 94. You know, the other really clear indicator of this is Harry Truman. He hit an approval rating low of 32% in 1946, and his 54-seat loss was clearly over his handling of the immediate post-war economic traumas the country was facing, and a natural desire of the country to just dump out the sitting party in a post-war circumstance. So, you know, there's your two record turnouts, 54 seats in the modern political era.
The most memorable one in recent history is 1994. Newt Gingrich led a Republican revolution in the House in the middle of Bill Clinton's first term.
That's right. Gingrich was the Republican minority leader, and he came up with the idea of the Contract with America, a series of votes and referendums that all of the individuals running for office signed on to this pledge that these items would be brought up in the House. And it did make one of the two most significant House turnarounds in modern U.S. history. So that 54-seat swing in 46 for Truman and the 54-seat swing for Clinton does kind of give you this idea that, hey, well, maybe it's a Democrat issue. It stands out, though, because the GOP took control of the House for the first time since 1954, a House that Republican Dwight Eisenhower had lost and now Newt Gingrich is able to bring back.
Those 54 seats that you mentioned, those two times 54 seats changed hands in the House, that the record?
Oh, no.
No?
We talk about the 54 really in the post-Second World War period, you know, in our modern political times. But, oh, not even close. Not even for the 20th century. Franklin Delano Roosevelt dropped 81 seats to the GOP in 1938.
81.
And again, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a president that we see as eminently popular, yet he and his party in power in 38 were facing a recession that was within the Great Depression. His failed attempt at packing the Supreme Court also blew back on him. So he turned a record majority of 338 to 88, dropping 81 seats, still a very significant majority, but you know, you've made a considerable impact. FDR's mark of 81 just edges Republican Warren G. Harding, who dropped an incredible 77 seats to the Democrats in 1922. Losing 50 or more seats is a pretty common number for the sitting president at the start of the century, with Wilson and Taft in their midterms. Here's the interesting stat, and this is where I think we go back to the media hullabaloo about Barack Obama might lose the House and 37 seats turn over. Every sitting president in the 20th century has taken some amount of loss during midterms in their careers. Only three times in the 20th century has the sitting president and his party avoided a midterm loss. The exceptions were Theodore Roosevelt, who gained seven in 1902, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who gained nine in 1934, and Clinton, who gained five in 98. Now, each one of those presidents also had, as we've talked about, very significant losses. The only president that came close to escaping not having a midterm loss in their career was JFK. He lost four seats in 1962.
In his only midterm.
In his only midterm, but, you know, think about that. He's coming out of the Cuban Missile Crisis. The country is, you know, we're having the Camelot popularity, but even JFK lost seats against his popularity.
I have a feeling you've told us about the 81 that FDR dropped in 38. You've told us about 77 that was dropped. I have a feeling we still haven't heard the biggest turnaround in a midterm election yet.
1894, Grover Cleveland is facing the worst economic period in U.S. history to date, second only to the Great Depression. The panic of 1893 set off unemployment, strikes, violence, nationwide rail strikes, and it shattered the Democratic Party. The GOP won 130 seats, the greatest midterm swing in U.S. history. The loss opened the door for the populist elements to take over the Democratic Party and bring about the great silver and gold debate that dominated the 1896 presidential election. Well, right before that, 1890, the Democrats made their big shot on the Republicans. The Congress in 1888 had begun to spend incredibly, so that by the 1890 midterm cycle, you had another one of these theme efforts by the party out of power, as the Democrats labeled the Republicans as the billion-dollar Congress, which indeed they were, the first Congress to have a billion-dollar federal budget. The label worked, and calling out the spendthrift Republicans led to an 86-seat gain for the Democrats and a 93-seat loss for the GOP. The balance went to the new populist party, which was coming about at that time. Ulysses S. Grant also lost 96 seats during his second term in 1874 as the Democrats were trying to regain some control and capitalize on scandals that had plagued the former Union general, now not so great, U.S. president.
Well, polls suggest that this sitting president is going to take a hit in just a few weeks. Any reason to think that history would show us differently?
Well, I'm not one to say that history will exactly repeat itself. I'm not a big fan of that old cliche. However, circumstances are certainly in place for a significant change. After all, even Abraham Lincoln took a midterm hit. The Democrats picked up 28 seats in his 1862 midterm during the opening years of the Civil War, and he would have lost control of the House except for the burgeoning new GOP's alliance with the Unionist Party's representatives.
So keep your eyes on the results from across the country, and until there is another issue to be taken to task,
we're history.
Bill Smith has his PhD in history, and he teaches history at Northwest Arkansas Community College.